She's still not sure about this. I'd like to try an experiment with you all, and if you want to participate, I'm going to invite you to close your eyes, and I promise I am not going to splash you with baptismal water, okay, just in case you're a little worried. It's an experiment with imagination. So I want you to imagine a place that you've been to that you love, a place that calms you, that's one of your favorite places to be. Maybe it's on your sofa, or maybe it's a place in the forest or up on a mountain that you've been to before. Imagine what that place looks like, what it smells like, what it feels like. Now I want you to imagine a place that you haven't been to, but you've seen a picture of. So like maybe a postcard of a Tahitian island, or the face of Matterhorn, maybe the Australian outback, or a piazza in Italy, something that you've seen before, but you've never been there. Imagine, what does that look like? What does it smell like? What does it feel like? Now I want you to imagine a place that you have never been to. A place that doesn't even exist. Something you've never seen a picture of, or a movie that included it. Something completely different. What does it look like? What are the features of your imaginary place? Now I invite you to share. What did you come up with? What does your imaginary place look like? Like heaven, but what does it look like? What else did you guys come up with? Fields of flowers, bright colors, intense light. Clover, sweet smells, yeah. A big sunrise with light going everywhere. Anybody else want to share what you saw? A field of snow. You are in the right state, woman. Yeah. Yeah. Pure quiet. Pure quiet. No overwhelming of the senses. Just being. Nice. Anybody else come up with something totally and completely different? Yeah, go, Eric. Pitch dark and empty. No sensory anything, just darkness. Yeah. Your face is everything? So there's a tree. Oh, with Robert's face. Oh, gosh. Oh dear. That's a little bit of a nightmare going on right there. Maybe you're too close to your brother. You need some alone time. There you go. I said an imaginary place. Katie. School. You imagined a school. Because I know you love school. Doing math. All right. What I noticed, first of all, was this easy or hard to imagine this other place? It's hard, easy, hard. You all describe something that you already have experience with. So snow, we already have an experience of snow. We already have an experience of darkness or a sunrise. We know what those things are. The only thing that I can imagine, how many of you saw the movie Avatar? They have the floating mountains in this movie from 2004. It's an older movie now. I feel old. But they have these mountains that are floating. They're not attached to anything. That would be something completely otherworldly. I think when we use our imaginations, especially as adults, we can't think beyond what we know. We can't imagine something other than snow or other than a mountain or other than a sunrise, because I think our experiences so much influence where our mind is allowed to go. And I'm reminded so much more in all of Scripture that God's ways are not our ways. Now, the way God does things and the way God thinks about things are so far different and miles ahead of what we think and where we're at, that God is just kind of dragging us along on this whole story. Jesus has been stirring the pot with different religious leaders. And just like us now, there are so many different sects, so many different denominations, so many different little parts in the Jewish church, just like we have now with the Christian church. And there's some that rely on the traditions of the elders, of what has been taught based on God's laws. And there's other groups that work really hard to stay separate from culture, from all the evil that's around them. They want to try and stay separate and pure. And then there's another group of people that only read God's law, and they stick to the letter of the law. And this last group are the Sadducees. And what they believe is they read those first five books of the Hebrew Bible, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, and nothing else. And they take everything they believe directly from those five books. And so for them, they don't read anything about an afterlife. There's just a place of nothingness after you die. And so they don't believe in any kind of resurrection, of being lifted up again from the grave. And they don't believe that, you know, all the hand washing that needs to happen like the Pharisees do, keeping to those laws. They live, they hope that they live right and are blessed by God in this life, and then they die. And that's the end of it. And you can see how much Jesus is stirring the pot and making these people uncomfortable, because all of these religious leaders now are trying to trick him and trap him and get him to look like he's what he's saying is wrong. And so the Sadducees come to ask Jesus a question. And the people that don't believe in resurrection are going to ask Jesus questions about resurrection. I think we're supposed to catch how absurd this is. And we're supposed to, you know, wonder at it and kind of laugh at it, because these guys are so desperate now to make Jesus look bad that even the people that don't believe in something will pretend they believe in it just to try and trap him. So here's our story. Jesus, hypothetically, let's say this woman marries the oldest brother in a family, and he ends up dying and she is childless. And so we follow this rule that was in Exodus, that now, or in Leviticus, that now she is supposed to marry the next oldest brother, so that we can produce an heir for the older brother. His name will live on into infamy through this child. But let's say she marries this guy, but he dies before, and she's still childless. So let's say this happens, oh, I don't know, five more times. In the resurrection, whose wife is she going to be? So I have this little card in my desk that says, I wonder sometimes if we give God a headache. And I'm pretty sure Jesus rolls his eyes. Because the people who don't believe in resurrection are trying to ask this tricky question about resurrection. And Jesus tells them, your imagination is way off of what the end of this life is going to look like. So I think we're so stuck in what we expect heaven to be like, that there's going to be marriage and giving in marriage and children, and that we're going to live and maybe just sit on the beach the whole entire time, but we're still just going to be with our family, and life's just going to continue the way it's always continued. But Jesus has a different story. He says that those who are worthy of that age are neither given in marriage or marry. They don't have kids. They become like angels. They become like the very messengers, the on-hand servants of God, like children of God, fully belonging to God. And then he goes on that it's really, heaven is not more of the same. It's not more and better of what we experience here. Because I think that's what our imaginations take us to, is that heaven will be a place where there's no war, that there's no government, that there's no economy, so there won't be any poor and there won't be any rich, and that there won't be any more problems with brokenness, human brokenness and system brokenness. And then we go on to imagine that there's these beautiful streets of gold. Revelation does a really good job of helping us paint what this picture might look like, but still using the stuff that we've experienced. So there's streets of gold, and then we imagine that there's houses lined up and white picket fences and grass you don't have to mow or snow you don't have to shovel. And so we imagine that heaven is going to be just this perfect neighborhood now where everybody lives in their own little house. And then if we're really good, then we imagine that when we look in the mirror, we get the thinnest, healthiest, strongest version of ourselves. And we don't have to worry about the extra love handles that we've collected on this earth. I mean, if that's all the further our imaginations extend, you guys, we are missing the hope that God has for us. Because heaven is going to be completely different than what we expect. Heaven is going to be completely different from what our lives look like now. And that makes us uneasy. Because I think what we hope for and what we expect is that when we die, things are going to go back to normal. We're going to go back to having those relationships again, that everything is going to be, it's going to be familiar, and it's going to be safe, and it's going to be normal. But God isn't about normal. God is about making things right, which means that all of those relationships that we do have and the ways that we can't always seem to follow after God are going to be fixed, that it's going to be made right, that we're going to see God face to face and have all of God's goodness surround us. And that the ways that we experience brokenness in this world, in our relationships with others, when we're trying to talk to somebody and we're not meeting face to face on the same page, or our expectations and our experiences make us say this, but they hear something different, and then they're hurt by what we're trying to get across, that all of those struggles we have in relationships are going to be gone. Because that brokenness and that pain that we've collected in this life are going to be healed and brought to wholeness. And then that relationship that we have with ourselves, all those negative things that we tell ourselves and all the ways that we fail and we can't get it right, that God is going to set that right too. And that we're not going to be as nitpicky towards ourselves or towards others as we have been in this life. It's not about setting things back to normal. It's about setting them right. How's that sound to your imagination? Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? And the people that we find that are worthy of that life are the people who have held on to God. The people who have looked to God and said that even though I've lost all these things or I can't get these things right, I know that you, God, are the one that lives. That you and in you alone do we have life and do we have strength for our lives. Because it's those who hold on to God that are promised that new life. But even more so, it's about the God who holds on to us. Because it's the same God that holds on to all of our ancestors. Jesus goes back to Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob. The God that made the promises to the people ages and ages ago is still the God that holds on to them and will be the God who holds on to us into the future. That it's the same God who meets us again and again in our lives, giving us way more chances than we deserve to get things right, because that God's love won't let us go. And it's the same God that carries us from this life into the next, that brings us through whatever our end on this world may be and into a place of hope and a place of life. That it's the same God who is the living God that carries all of us into this new life. And through our faith and trust in this God, we will never die. It's a mystery. And this is far beyond what we could imagine heaven to be like, because it's not something we've experienced in this life yet. But one thing is for certain, that as we talk about our end and the end of our loved ones, that as we live in this place that is punctuated by grief and by loss, that there is a God who still lives in the midst of it, a God who still carries us in the midst of it, and that God brings that love and that life to reign in us. Not leaving us in despair, but carrying us along, that we may trust God's work, both in this life and in the life to come. And that is more than we could ever ask or imagine. Amen. If you are able, I invite you to stand. We call upon God to reign in us and